Well, it might seem that the mad science of comic books is an escape from reality.
Welcome. This is Stan Lee of Marvel Comics warning you to look around you. Your classmates, your friends, you never know which one of them may be a mutant, a person born with strange and wondrous powers. Now, some mutants, like the X-Men, use their special gifts for good. But then there are the terrorist mutants who plan to destroy the human race.
Mutants. I hate them.
But a closer look shows that superpowers of comic book heroes and villains might be firmly grounded in modern science and technology. I'm joined by Savine Mathadu, who's a professor of material science and engineering at NC State. Savine, good to talk with you. Welcome back.
Hey, Frank.
Also joining us is Howard Kraft, who is a writer and the creator of the Jade City Pharaoh. It's a radio series that began right here at WUNC, and superhero Harold Jones is back for season two. It starts this Saturday at 2 o'clock, part of Snap Judgment. Howard Kraft, welcome back. Good to have you here.
What's good, Frank? Good to be here, man.
Savine, let's start with you. You say that it's a common occurrence to see this kind of thing pop up in science, in comics. Give us an example of some of the ways in which real science appears on superheroes.
Well, like, real science appears in nearly all superhero comics and in the movies that have spun off of it. One of the main examples I like to give is Captain America's Indestructible Shield. One more that's more recent is Spider-Man designing the ultra-high-strength webbing that he uses in the comic books and in the movies. In the last series of movies, it was part of his genetic mutation. I didn't prefer that. I liked the original comic where he was a material scientist in his own way and made his own web.
What about that shield? What's in the shield?
The shield is made of adamantium and a steel and a mystery element and vibranium. So it really depends on what you think of it. And vibranium is a mystery element that was created by Marvel that absorbs and channels kinetic energy, so it lets the shield do what it's supposed to do.
Adamantium, as in adamant?
same root word.
All right. Batman.
Not adamant the singer, adamant.
You see, it just weaves its way into pop culture. They are mutations that find their way into every aspect of our culture, down from science. What about Batman? I know you've talked about some of the real aspects of the technological aspects in Batman.
Oh, yeah. So in Batman, especially in the movies, he has a research facility akin to something like DARPA where they can create advanced armor, advanced gliding suits, the vehicles that he drives in, all of which are driven by advanced science and technology. And there's some aspects depicted in nearly every comic book and in the movies as well.
Are you a fan of superheroes, Savine?
Absolutely, yeah.
Were you? I mean, is this what drove you? I mean, what got you interested in science by any chance?
I'd certainly say that science fiction as a whole and comics played a large role in my interest in science and figuring things out. It's hard to say, you know, it's a chicken or egg kind of problem.
Well, Howard Kraft, let me ask you, you got to remind us about the Jade City Pharaoh, its origins, and the superpowers enjoyed by Harold Jones, our superhero.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, well, Harold Jones is his – well, I'll talk about his superpowers first. He has the ability to fly. He also has the ability to project ki energy in a very powerful way. He can manipulate it. He doesn't have to sleep very much to rejuvenate himself. He has extraordinary dexterity, but he's not bulletproof, so he can be killed.
Yeah, and where did the idea for this character come from for you?
The powers are the character itself.
Yeah, we'll start with the character.
Okay. Well, the Jade City Pharaoh comes from a play that was commissioned a couple of years ago by Little Green Pig Theater, and when creating this character, I looked at some of the African-American superheroes and what I didn't like about how they were done and tried to do the opposite of that. And the things that I did like, trying to bring them forward. So with Harold, I wanted him to – a lot of the early African-American superheroes come out of the blaxploitation films. And so they don't have a lot of depth. They're very stoic-type characters, and I wanted to get more into – his humanity, for lack of a better way of putting it, his conflicts within himself, and what the pressure of being a superhero and what the pressure of being an African-American superhero would be in this particular moment in time.
We get a lot of that now in season two. The humanity of Harold Jones is a big part of his. And the problem, just trying to get his bills paid.
Yeah, just trying to get his bills paid, man. You know, Citibank is calling constantly.
What about the superhero? Let's go back to your origins and your love of comics. I mean, how long have you been interested in this kind of thing?
Comic books have, you know, I've always loved comics. If I had to pick two things that have probably influenced my being a writer, it would be comics and it would be hip-hop. So in the J.C. Fair, we get to combine those two worlds. Now, I write all kinds of stuff, and I'm interested in all kinds of things, but those were the origins, comics, because I liked the stories. As a kid, I liked the mythology. So, yeah, it's basically the foundation.
What was your favorite? Or it is your favorite?
Luke Cage, who is probably the most popular African-American superhero, not the first on Marvel anyway. The first was Black Panther, but Luke Cage was, I used to read Power Man and Iron Fist, was a team up between him and Iron Fist.
Now, you've talked about the influence of the X-Men on you as well, right?
Big influence. Stan Lee is, you know, he's really a visionary when you think about what him and Jack Kirby, who drew most of those early comics and what they were doing. X-Men, because what science fiction allows us to do is allows us to create metaphors. A lot of times when we talk about things in a direct way, people shut down. They can't hear the conversation. But when the X-Men, other than the science, which is awesome, in that you're dealing with the complexities of xenophobia, of fear, of intolerance, and while we might not be able to deal with that in our, you know, in a real way amongst each other, we can see it play out, you know, in the X-Men and how that warps the society.
Yeah, here's a pretty good example from Pride of the X-Men in the original pilot. Let's listen.
Take this mutie we're hauling tonight, for example. He's too dangerous to live.
I am Magneto. Release me. I command it.
I've never seen anything like it. His power.
He's a mutant. A stinking mutant. He doesn't deserve to live on the same planet as normal, decent human beings.
There you go, X-Men. So, Savine, I mean, that is certainly, at least reflects one of the deepest anxieties that we hear throughout superheroes, and has a great root in science, which is to say mutation, right?
That's correct.
And this is, go ahead.
Mutation... In many ways, people don't know. Stan Lee decided on mutations because he got tired of making scientific backstories for all of the characters that he was developing. So he just said, I'm just going to give them all mutations. But, mutation is a natural part of science and occurs now anyways in the same way as it does in X-Men and many other characters.
Well, and it's great stuff for science fiction because mutation is how we got here. We have been mutating for a long, long time, and that's how we got to be human. And then it's our deepest fear that either we're going to change somehow or something's going to change us in ways that will either kill us or make us into something that we're not happy being.
And fear will not change the fact that it's going to happen, whether we like it or not.
Which is why we write these stories, in order to, as you say, Howard, kind of project these fears up and take a look at them, have a conversation about them in ways that we just don't. And xenophobia, too. It's like this mutation doesn't deserve to live with us humans.
Right,
like
right.
We're not a bundle of mutations ourselves.
Exactly.
You know? So Howard, tell us a little more about Harold this season, because he's going to take on some more issues, too, as well. Social issues, and it's an adventure. Let me ask you that, because this thing, I happen to know, as the guy who actually did the audio mixing, and Robin Copley, our technical director, did the recording.
Excellent work, I might add.
I'm sitting right here. but the mixing is fun, and putting this thing together is a great challenge, but I begin to see what you're doing and the creative side of making this pure adventure, pure fun, but there's always something going on that's a lot deeper. When you approach the scripts and the character yourself, I mean, kind of what drives you when you're creating this character and each episode?
What drives me, I guess I would say, is the current events. You know, we live in this world and things that happen in the news, and I think about how would that play out in Jade City? What are things that are important as far as social justice? And how can we weave that into story and take a look at it? And then also going from season one, the development of his relationships and interpersonal relationships, because things don't happen in a bubble. You know, you deal with a tragic shooting at the same time. You had to go to the grocery store and get milk, you know. So just trying to weave that in into story and then process it through Jade City and through Harold.
Well, we've got a little clip. This is from episode 12. As we say, season two of Jade City is going to get started this Saturday at 2 o'clock as part of Snap Judgment. And this is a little scene from episode 2:12.
Jones, how are you even alive?
You owe. I'm here to collect. Me and you. No superpowers.
You come straight out of a comic book. Two fingers, sucker.
Damn it! Trapdoor, I should have expected that. Gotta beat him to the street.
Bowie, bring the car around now. Drive!
There you are. He's headed straight toward the roadblock. No! Ceasefire! Ceasefire! The driver's dead. The beef cooker. He's not in here. He's not in here! How the hell did he... No! 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 Beef cooker!
Cooks, man, they really don't want it with the Pharaoh. When he wrecked his shop in the green paper barrel. See, son, it's bad down to the bone marrow. Harold remembers Jones.
Oh, there you are. Your singing debut on the radio. That's pretty good. Tell us what was happening in that scene.
The notorious beef cooker, Arch Hood villain, escapes from Harold Jones after Harold Jones has pretended to be dead in order to locate him. And so I don't want to ruin too much of it for the listening audience who will tune in. But in that scene, the beef cooker is making one of his famous escapes from Harold. He's always seems to be one step ahead.
So what is this line? You come straight out of the comic, Two Fingers.
Well, Two Fingers is just a hip-hop reference to Peace, you know, Peace, Two Fingers. Mm. And You Come Straight Out of a Comic Book is actually a quote from the great African-American actor who is no longer with us, Kick Him in the Belly, Jim Kelly, in the movie Enter the Dragon, where he says, "Mr. Handman, you come straight out of a comic book."
So we got
so I like to mix stuff in.
Lots of cool references like that. Sabine, you know, we talked about how we're not able to have the conversations. As somebody whose whole life is involved in creating, you know, technology and the science that underpins all of this, when you hear the conversations we have about going forward and technology, the fears that we have, I mean, are you worried that those of us in the media who aren't properly educated and reading the papers, I mean, in some ways, we're not really prepared to have conversations about the way technology is moving? It's moving so quickly.
Well, like Howard, I'm also a fan of hip-hop, and in some ways, as with hip-hop music, any good press, whether good or bad, is still good press.
Yeah, but
it gets the word out there.
Yeah.
We can't expect everyone to be experts at what we're experts in. And in some ways, as long as it catches the attention of somebody out there, even if there's some slight inaccuracy to it, it may inspire someone somewhere to do something.
Right.
I don't have any fear of that.
Yeah. We talked about X-Men, and we didn't really get your take on what's going on with them and kind of where's the real science in the X-Men.
The real science of the X-Men and genetic mutation, I think we're getting to a point where we are going to see more involvement of biological aspects in human treatment and in healing, and we don't know what effects those will have on our bodies moving forward.
We can see more and more anxiety over that with the number of series now based on the cyborg, which is this kind of ambiguous, is it human, is it computer, is a cyborg in Jade City as well, right?
Yeah, Anvil Steel is the half-man, half-machine, ex-super-soldier gone insane, basically.
Right, but that's, Savine, that's the kind of the thing that worries us. On the one hand, it's given us some great promise in terms of medical technology, but it really leaves us wondering what it means to be human and whether we're going to be human or survive as humans going forward, or the only way to survive is to somehow hook us up to a mainframe.
Yeah, according to some people like Stephen Kurzweil, you know, when we reach the singularity, there won't be any need to have biological bodies anymore. We'll exist in a form that is completely electronic.
Wow.
Are there fears of that? Yeah, there's fears of that. But I'm sure this is a dilemma that has plagued human society for as long as we've been alive. You know, the fear of the unknown and what's coming next. I mean, if you take someone from 100 years ago and ask them to look at the technology that we have now, as Arthur C. Clarke would say, it would look like magic to them, yeah. And they would be scared of it.
Yeah.
Savine, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Frank. And thank you, Howard.
Hey, cool, man. Good to meet you.
Savine Mathadu is a professor of material sciences at NC State. Howard Kraft, a writer and the creator of The Jade City Pharoah, Season 2 of The Jade City Pharoah, kicks off this Saturday, 2 o'clock, part of Snap Judgment. You can find out more about the series at our website, stateofthings.org. Howard, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for having me on, man.
More of The State of Things just ahead. Please stay with us.
Man, they really don't want it with the Pharaoh. When he wrecked his shop in the green paper barrel, see, son, is bad down to the bone marrow. Harold M. F. Jones, the Jade City Pharaoh.